And I want to welcome you to the I Want to Know More podcast for this week. On this week's podcast, we're going to the book of 1 Kings, 1 Kings chapter number 16. 1 Kings chapter number 16, and we're going to begin reading with verse number 15. Now, just to give you a little bit of background, the story of the kings of Israel after the split between Jeroboam and Rehoboam, Jeroboam being, of course, the self-proclaimed king of the north, and of course the 10 tribes had made him king of the north, and then Judah made Rehoboam. Rehoboam was already king of Israel, of all Israel, but he kept Judah, Benjamin, Simeon, and the portion of Levi, the priests, that were in Jerusalem. That's four tribes. You say, how does 10 plus 4 come up to 12? 12 tribes. Well, it's actually pretty easy. You've got the 10 tribes to the north, which included Ephraim, West Manasseh, and East Manasseh. Two half tribes of Manasseh. They were both counted. Double portion of the portion of the elder son. Joseph got a triple portion. He got a portion for Ephraim, and he got two portions for Manasseh on the west side of Jordan and Manasseh on the east side of Jordan in the land of Gilead. And so you got to keep those in mind. Plus, Levi didn't get any land. And that's where Joseph was split in two and replaced Levi. So Manasseh and Ephraim replaced Levi and Joseph. But then there was another tribe that was absorbed. And that tribe was absorbed into Judah. The area of the tribe of Simeon was completely enclosed by the area of the tribe of Judah. Simeon was completely enclosed by Judah. And so over the years, the book of Judges tells us that Simeon and Judah went together and they were counted together. And so Simeon now goes away and that's replaced in the north by East Manasseh, the half tribe of Manasseh in Gilead. And so it works out. There's 14, tribes, but, they only count as 12 and, they only actually count as 11. Because Levi didn't have any land. And so you have Judah. You have a tribe for David, Judah, and a tribe for Jerusalem, which was Benjamin. And Benjamin and Judah went in together, which is really interesting because Benjamin was the tribe of Saul. And so the tribe of Saul was allied with the tribe of David. Is that not interesting? I think it's really interesting. Of course, that was in David's best interests because that kept his potential enemies in Judah. And so Judah had the rightful claim to the throne. And Jerusalem is in Benjamin. It's right on the border of Benjamin and Judah, but it is in Benjamin. And so those things, those details matter. But the northern 10 tribes split, went to Jeroboam. And Jeroboam, because he saw that the Israelites would go to Jerusalem for all these feasts, he figured in his mind, well, if they go there, then they're going to end up wanting to go back and be ruled by David, because that's what the priests are going to teach. And that's true. And so Jeroboam made two altars with golden calves and altars of idols, one in Bethel, the house of God. Now, mind you, there's an idol in the house of God. There's a message there, by the way. And then the other in Dan. And Dan, to the north, the city that used to be called Luz, now called Dan, that's, so at both ends. In fact, the old saying is from Dan to Beersheba, that's the entire country, gather all Israel from Dan even to Beersheba. So the history of the northern kingdom is very fractured because God kept taking one dynasty out and putting in another. And so here in 1 Kings chapter 16, we are at the end of the second dynasty. Jeroboam founded the first dynasty of Israel, the northern kingdom, and then Baasha founded the second. His son Elah was the reigning king prior to the events of 1 Kings 16. Now, 1 Kings 16 records the deposition, the coup d'etat that's not the way you're supposed to pronounce it. It's a French word, coup d'etat, or something along those lines. Anyway, a coup, a military takeover happened, and Elah was killed by his servant Zimri. And Zimri was ruler of half the chariots. So he wasn't much of a general. He wasn't the big general. The captain of the host was Omri. And so we're going to look and see what happens to Zimri here. So 1 Kings chapter number 16. 1 Kings chapter number 16. And verse number 15. 1 Kings 16:15. In the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, did Zimri reign 7 days in Tirzah. And the people were encamped against Gibbethon, which belongeth to the Philistines. And the people that were encamped heard say, Zimri hath conspired, and hath also slain the king. Wherefore all Israel made Omri, the captain of the host, king over Israel that day in the camp. And Omri went up from Gibbethon, and all Israel with him, and they besieged Tirzah. And it came to pass, when Zimri saw that the city was taken, that he went into the palace of the king's house, and burnt the king's house over him with fire, and died. For his sins which he sinned in doing evil in the sight of the Lord, in walking in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin which he did to make Israel to sin. Now the rest of the acts of Zimri and his treason that he wrought, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? That's where we're going to stop. Because, I mean, we could get into the history of this. We could talk about the history and we could go into his treason. That's not the subject matter. The subject matter is what Zimri did to end his own life and why he did it. And we've been talking about that for several weeks now. Starting with Abimelech, he committed suicide out of pride. Then we go to Samson. He committed suicide for revenge. Then we go to Saul and Saul's armor bearer. They committed suicide out of hopelessness and fear of living. They were afraid to live because they knew the Philistines would torture them to death. And so they were in a torturous situation, and they decided to end it rather than the Philistines ending it in a very slow and painful manner. Then we see Ahithophel. And Ahithophel, well, he committed suicide because he wasn't about to be servant to that King David anymore. He knew David wouldn't kill him, and he refused to live and be under David's rule. He committed suicide out of disappointment, I guess, maybe. He was disappointed in that he would now have to live under the reign of David, and he would have to look at him every day, and he couldn't stand that. And so he ended it. He ended his life, and he ended it. He took care of things. He put his house into order. He took care of all the inheritance and everything, and then he went and hung himself. That's what happened to Ahithophel. Now, we've been mentioning throughout this that God doesn't pronounce judgment on these people. He hasn't, because it's not necessary. Thou shalt not kill is one of the Ten Commandments. And there's no exclusion there for killing yourself. That's just as much a sin as murdering someone else. Self-murder is what suicide is. It's one thing to have an accidental death. It's another thing to be negligent and die out of negligence, although that rises to murder if you do it to someone else. If you're negligent and your negligence causes someone else to die, that can be considered murder or voluntary manslaughter. It's either second-degree murder or voluntary manslaughter, depending on the state of the U.S. you're in and whatever other nation you might be under the laws of. Each nation and each state of the U.S. do things a little differently. And so they call it different things. It just depends. Voluntary manslaughter is probably the best term for it because it's not intentional. It's negligent, carelessness. You weren't careful enough to keep it from happening. And so at that point, it becomes a crime. But we're talking about murder. That is intentional. It's premeditated and with malice. And those things are satisfied in the self-murder of suicide. So the Bible doesn't judge it because there's no need. It's already judged. It's already dealt with in other scriptures about killing someone else. Now, obviously, the punishment can't be applied. Can't be applied to you after you've killed yourself. And so there's no punishment for suicide. But it is self-murder. That's what it is. And, you know, might as well shell down the corn, as the old saying goes. Might as well shell down the corn. Might as well just face the facts, face the music. That's what it is. So what's Zimri's reason? I mean, look at Zimri's actions here. First off, he has killed the king. He's taken the king's life, and now he's holed up in the fortress of Tirzah. And Tirzah is a fairly well-defended city. The lessons in the siege of Tirzah influence Omri, because Omri's the next king of Israel. And of course, Omri's more famous son, Ahab, is the next king. Omri sees the disadvantages of Tirzah, and he knows of a hill. And that hill would be an ideal place to put a city that could be very easily defended. And so that city becomes the city of Samaria. And so Samaria is built where it's built and how it's built, specifically to defend against the very type of siege that Omri did against the former capital, Tirzah. Omri knew all too well the weaknesses of Tirzah. It fell pretty easily. It fell pretty quickly. Zimri only reigned 7 days. So in that 7 days' time, he killed the king. He got on the throne. Word went to Gibbethon, which probably took a little while. And then Omri was made king in the camp. And Omri brought the entire crew back, and they besieged Tirzah, and the whole thing only took 7 days. Not a very well-defended city. Not a very easily defensible city. And so Omri saw how quickly it fell, and that bothered him, I'm sure. And so that's why he designed Samaria the way it was designed, where it was on a steep hill, and in order to get to the gates, you had to go around the city right up under the walls to the gate, which was overlooking almost like a cliff, is what archaeology tells us about the city of Samaria. It was designed with military precision, and it was designed to withstand a long siege. And that's how you defeat a city that's well fortified. That's how the Romans defeated Jerusalem. Jerusalem is incredibly well fortified. At least it was at the time of General Titus of Rome, not to be confused with Paul's disciple Titus, that the book's named after. It was a very common name. But the General Titus It took a while to get Jerusalem to submit and to break through the walls and the gates of the city of Jerusalem. Very well fortified, very well defended, and very defensible. Tirzah, not so much. And so this very siege informed Omri's future. But Zimri's there, he's in the palace, and now it's, okay, now what? Now what? He only commands half the chariots. Most of the army is at Gibbethon. Did he think they were just going to roll over and him be king? No, apparently he was in it for the quick thrill. He was in it for the thrill. He killed Elah very quickly, and it, you know, the Lord had prophesied it through a prophet by the name of Jehu. He had prophesied it, and Jehu had prophesied that Elah would die, and this was prophesied to Elah's father, Baasha, and Elah did not reign very long, I believe 2 years, and that wasn't 2 complete years. That was parts of 2 years. It might have been 1 day of 1 year and a few days of the next, and it would have still been counted as 2 years. That's the way they counted things. No matter how little of the first year you reigned, it was counted as your first year. And no matter how little of your reign was in the second year, it would in your last year, it was counted as a full year. So as long as you went over the new year, you could become king the day before the new year and lose your kingdom the day after new year and reign 3 days and it still be accounted 2 years. Not likely that that's the case, but still. And the reason I mention that is because if you do the math on Asa's reign, you'll find out that we're in the 27th year of Asa's reign, but look back a few verses and see where we are in Asa's reign when Elah gets the throne. And if you're not real careful, you'll imagine a contradiction. But you have to understand how they counted the reigns, how they counted how long somebody reigned. In any case, Elah did not reign very long. And he was riding on his father's coattails. And so his father, Baasha, had been the one that had built this palace. And this was the king's palace. And so Zimri is strolling the halls of the palace, and he's enjoying the surroundings and enjoying stolen valor. He's enjoying stolen riches. And he's fully enjoying the trappings of being king. And then here comes Omri. Here comes Omri with the army. They close all the gates and everything, but it's not long till the city's fallen. Omri knew all the defenses. He knew the holds. He knew everything about it. He was the captain of the host. He probably knew things about the city that Zimri did not. And Zimri hears Omri is in the city. The city is fallen. And Zimri knows it's all over. He also knows he's going to die for treason. And so he figures, well, if I can't have this, nobody can. And so he burns the entire palace with him in it. Now, that's not an easy way to go. It's not. And the Bible doesn't tell us if he, you know, hung himself or fell on his sword or did something else to prevent him from having the painful death of burning. Maybe he died of smoke inhalation. I don't know. But he chose to burn the house down with him in it over being captured by Omri and surely being put to death and put to death as a traitor. He knew. He knew it wouldn't be long, and he knew that Omri would not make it easy. And he decided to do it himself. But again, I don't think it was as much he was afraid of the torture. I don't think it was as much he felt hopeless. I mean, he could have fled. He probably could have got away. I don't know. He might have. But no, his attitude was one of spite. He did this out of spite. He says, if I can't have this, nobody can. That's the way it looks like, at least. That's the way it appears. It looks this way if you look in and see he's burned the whole palace around him. He's going to die in luxury. He'd rather die in luxury than live and not have the luxury, now that he's tasted the life of luxury, at least for a couple of days. And there's so many people. There's so many people. They go out and they live in sin for a short period of time. And then the day of reckoning comes and they say, well, if I can't have it, nobody can. And they commit suicide out of spite. To get, not for revenge, but for spite. Little difference there. Little difference. Omri had not done anything to Zimri. But Zimri was going to spite whoever was going to succeed him. And he was going to make them rebuild everything. And there are people who commit suicide in such a way, not because they're trying to get revenge for somebody wronging them, but because they're just simply have the attitude of spite. The world has some words for that that I don't and won't use. But the idea of just simple spite, it's kind of like road rage. You know, you're driving along, you don't even know the person. Person cuts you off, and you get road rage. And there are people that will spite people. They'll even get into a wreck just to make sure the other person doesn't get there any faster. And that's not exactly revenge, because you don't know the person. It's out of spite. And that's, you know, there's an old saying, cut off your nose to spite your face. That's a saying I heard as a youngster many times. And that's the idea of, you would do this. You would even cut off your nose to spite your face because you don't like being proven wrong. That's usually the context. Because I hated it. I hated being proven wrong. When I said something and I thought I was right, buddy, I hated. Oh, I hated it when my dad would prove me wrong. And that's when the expression would come up. Well, you'd cut off your nose to spite your face. The way you're acting about being proven wrong, just, you're wrong, admit it, go on with your life. Some people have a hard time with that. Zimri had a hard time with that. And to spite whoever was going to succeed him, he said, you're not getting this palace. You're not getting these riches. It's mine, it's mine, it's all mine, and you can't have it. I'd rather die than let you have these riches, even for a day. That's Zimri's attitude. And there are suicides. There are suicides that occur because of that. Don't be a spiteful Zimri. It doesn't really hurt. Omri wasn't going to stay in Tirzah anyway. He was going to build a whole new palace and a whole new city in Samaria. Of course, Zimri didn't know that, but that's what was going to happen. And I want to thank you for listening to the podcast for this week. I Want to Know More is a podcast ministry of Brother Lamar Owen. I'm out of the Macedonia Baptist Church, located in the Silverstein community of Transylvania County. You can correspond with me by writing to broadcast@lamarowen.net. That's emailing broadcast@lamarowen.net. And join us here again next week for the I Want to Know More podcast.